cages.
Yeah. All right, Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back. And as always, we are joined by Kyle, but we needed some reinforcements for this episode. We are talking the Dark Ages, 21 through 25, and we are bringing Celestina in. If you don't know Celestina, she is a longtime patron of the Specialist. She's also one of my two amazing race co-hosts, one being Kyle, and then Celestina and I do Root Info, where we dig a little bit deeper into some topics from the Amazing Race over on the Patreon. So, John, you're actually the odd man out here. This episode is Oops, all McKenna's co-hosts. And we are excited to talk about these episodes. Because, man, it's going to be time. So let's dive right into Nicaragua. We have Alina as our first juror here. Alina winds up voting for Chase, not the eventual winner. But the entire episode of her boot, you're not shocked at the result that she goes home. It is broadcasted the entire time. And there's like no subtlety, no like maybe somebody else could go home. Alina is going home this episode.
Yeah, this is Nicaragua, right? Like, and this is part of the reason why we brought Celestina on. She's a longtime defender of Nicaragua, so we'll let her speak on it. But this is a very interesting time because Nicaragua really did kind of shift when we got to the merch because. We had these swap tribes, the swap Lafleuran Espada tribes, kind of really define how things were going here. Mm-hmm. The season originally is divided out by age with the young tribe and the old tribe. And when there's a swap, we see a lot of connections kind of happening. Now, a lot of that is, you know, the original Espadas are kind of sticking together. The older folk, they tend to stick together. The younger folk do. But there are some very pivotal relationships here that really define how things go. And a lot of that does come from like a confrontation that we get in this episode is between Fabio and Alina, where Alina's like, okay, we can get the numbers. Let's get out Marty. But Marty is someone who's made a connection with Fabio, who Fabio trusts mm-hmm. there, and really kind of does drive this home of the idea of like why Alina had to go here. And it's not really discussed in the season at all because no one on this season knows what Survivor is. But Alina's essentially being targeted for being like a Parvati-esque player, right? Like she's a young, attractive woman who is intelligent and can kind of pull numbers her way. She's also been a bit on the outside throughout this entire section, kind of like, you know, working with and then like getting in conflict with Nayanka because that's everyone's role on this season. Yeah. And it really does kind of seem like Alina's not contributing a lot to this jury, but she is at the same time. And that's what makes it really hard to determine her impact on the end result of the season.
Yeah. Celestina, I mean, let's give us your thoughts on Alina here in Nicaragua and how you think she is as a juror, because this is my bottom season. I despise Nicaragua, so it was a little bit of torture to watch this episode, but please regale us with some love for it.
You know, I'm here to bring hope to the Dark Ages. You know, that's why I'm here. Honestly, like the first thing I had when I started this with Alina was that I randomly just am a part of the Alina fan club for some reason, which is like kind of like that was my first thing that I said. Because like you were saying, John, she did give that Parvati-esque vibe. Not necessarily that she's the same player, but that was the perception that she was given to a lot of people. And you'll start seeing that there's a lot of common threads between a lot of the first jury members that you're going to see and their perception of being sort of this like strategic threat within the little alliance that they have formed. And so I feel like you're right about Alina in that regard. The reason why I am more positive on Nicaragua is just I love the character moments, and I'm a huge I defend Fabio because I think that he did know a little bit more than he was letting on. And I just liked the way that it ended out. And I liked the just natural chaos of things. I enjoyed that the train wreck of it all. But I do think that what's interesting, and I know we haven't really gotten to like the actual part of how she votes at the end, but I do think it was interesting in kind of looking it together, like you were saying, John, that yes, she did have an impact, but at the same time, I also feel like the impact doesn't seem necessarily super obvious because she ends up voting for Chase, which adds like this extra layer of I think intrigue, because she's in my final like evaluation is I didn't actually think that that was necessarily super impactful, but I do think that she looks at the game very black and white. She doesn't really look at it nuanced, in that like there she voted for Chase, and I think from the outskirts, like Chase played that sort of standard sort of game, mm-hmm. and it wasn't necessarily as obvious. But so I think that's why she did it, and it fits the mold of what her archetype was meant to do. So I think in that regard, it makes sense. Like I don't see her voting for Fabio, and especially in that. Because she had that that altercation or incident that was happening too, so it does all make sense. But I think you, like you were saying, it's interesting to see like what type of longevity impact it actually had on the game.
Kyle,
yeah, it's interesting to look at her arc with Fabio here, because they do have their altercation where Fabio is like, "This is why nobody trusts you," like all that stuff that he says. What's interesting is Alina was kind of on the outs for a long time because mm-hmm. of her association with Shannon. She mm-hmm. was on the wrong side of the Shannon vote. You know who else was on the wrong side of the Shannon vote? Fabio. So they voted together.
Fabio's on the wrong side of almost every vote, Kyle. It yeah. doesn't count.
But they were, what I'm saying is they were aligned at some point. Then they get split off at the swap. So Fabio doesn't know what Alina's doing. Then they come back together and he's like, "This is why no one trusts you." It's like you were aligned and then you were apart. And then now you don't like her. Like, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. So in that case, you're right, where it's like it makes total sense that she votes for Chase here. And I don't remember exactly who Chase swayed with his speech. I think Alina may have been one of those votes. I know it was Jane, Holly, Brenda, and Alina, I think, were the mm-hmm. vote for Chase. Sure. But yeah, when you think about their relationship, it does make a lot of sense why Fabio loses her vote and Chase ultimately gets it.
This conversation with Fabio and Alina was wild to me, because Alina comes up to Fabio and is like, "All right, this is what we can do to get Marty out, steps X, Y, and Z." And Fabio's like, "This is why you're on the bottom. You're like, everything has an agenda when you're talking to people." And she's like, "I'm literally going home if I don't do this. Like, what do you expect from this conversation? Like, it's either me have this conversation with you or I go home, and I'd rather not do the latter." So that whole like conversation really just dropped Fabio for me as a winner. I was high on him because I think I do appreciate the, you know, "I'm playing dumb. I got to the end because of X, Y, and Z. Here's actually what I thought was going on." But that whole conversation of like, "Man, you're playing too hard. This is why you're going home." And it's like, "Well, I have to because I'm going home." And then the other thing that we haven't mentioned is what kind of seals her fate is she stumbles upon Nayanka with the hiding the pan and the flower and the fruits, where Nayanka does all this. And then Nayanka's like, "Here, come follow me and let's eat this orange together. And here's this mango." And then the whole camp finds out about it and that Alina was involved. And then they're like, "Oh yeah, you were already on the bottom, but now you're really on the bottom."
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is a misplay and something that we've seen a couple of times in Survivor history, right? Where, fun fact, hiding food, not a good strategy in Survivor, because people will get very mad at you.
Yeah.
Because food is very limited and they're already cranky because they're not getting enough food. Mm-hmm. So doing this and not playing coy about it really did seal Alina's fate. In relation to the conversation she has with Fabio, though, I think it's a bit unfair to judge Judd by this conversation here. because
Judd, you had to switch it to Judd.
Yeah, I just had to switch that up a little bit. Because I think in Survivor, you're looking for confirmation bias, right? And I think what Fabio's doing in this situation is, hey, you're doing this thing that we say you're doing. And despite the fact that, McKenna, you're correct, and that is what she should be doing, and, like, trying to fight for herself there, it doesn't matter, because Fabio's already made up his mind, and that's why he's saying, hey, you're just proving my point. Because that is so necessary in Survivor sometimes, because if you... Sometimes, if you think about something, you kind of realize where the fault in your logic is, and that can really make things confusing and make it very hard to determine something. And sometimes it's easier just to be like, yeah, this is the plan. I have to stick with it, right? Just follow the words of Keith Nail and stick to the plan. And that's the way to approach it. And I think that's where Alina kind of gets into this mess here, is unfortunately, she was already on the bottom of LeFleur. There's another tribe coming, a swap tribe that is working pretty closely together, comes in at the merge and says, hey, Alina, sorry, you were already on the bottom before and now you're on this other side and we have to like kind of get our numbers here. So, bye.
And it's just really easy. She's also on the bottom of Swap Espada too. Like merging, Benry is like, well, Alina's really going to be booted now because we couldn't get her during Espada, but you know, come this first boot, she's on the chopping block. Pivoting a little bit to her final tribal council question, she talks to Fabio and says, you're the ultimate surfer boy, but I don't want to give the money to a boy. I want to give it to a man. Then goes to Sash and is like, all right, this is your shot. You worked for your spot here. Convince me why you deserve the win more than the young guys. And then Chase,
he's young too. Sorry,
no, he's like surprisingly older than you think he is.
He's like 10 years older than Fabio or something that.
I can do this.
If this was Panama, he may have been 30.
Sash is 30 years old this season.
Okay,
so he is significantly older than the other two.
It's crazy.
Chase, she was pleasantly surprised, by his game and everything. She said, you tell me I have to vote, why she has to vote for him and not the other guys. And then the boys argue a lot. And then she says, I like what's happening here. Two, maybe three men fighting for their spot.
That's such a funny comment. I just rewatched this final tribal because I was doing a Nicaragua recap for Mr. Andrew Denson. It is interesting. She you really get her vibe on Fabio here. She calls him a boy multiple times, maybe three men fighting. Like it's that was interesting to me.
Well, it's funny that he went from boy to man because all of a sudden when he's arguing now, all of a sudden, one thing I will say, there's a lot of things I like about Fabio and obviously I'm in the minority and I love being in the minority because I like Stan this season a lot. I don't know why. But Fabio is, he played a very vulnerable game and a very emotional game. And I actually really appreciated that. And you see, like, there's lots of episodes of him like crying and like being really vulnerable and like just, and I really think that resonated with that. And I don't know if Alina was looking at that at the emotional side and thinking that that is associated with a boy because it's more younger and not as like seen maybe as mature. And then there was also moments where he was very hyper, like he just was all over the place, like it's like he had like a candy bar or something too. So I feel like it was because of like his emotional, like how he was acting, that she had that perception of him too. But it is interesting in the final tribal council how she has these sort of like perceptions of them when they're all around the same age but it's just like the way their demeanors and stuff.
And that's actually something I was going to bring up to Celestina as well. It's like, Alina's 23. She's younger than Chase is. Chase is 24, and she's only 2 years older than Fabio. So the fact that she's calling these two
young
boys,
men,
Like, it really does reflect on how she's approaching the game. And I think this is more of a statement. Again, these are people who don't really know the game of Survivor. Like, it's very fair to say that about every season we are talking about. There'll be one or two people who know what's going on, and the majority of the cast won't. And so, which means, and we've talked about this in previous episodes, it means you have to change kind of the way you approach the jury. And I think what we really see here from Alina is looking for a bit more maturity. You look at the age Alina. Alina's 23, which means likely she just finished being a senior in college, right? So she's done with college people. And we've all been, all four of us at least, and a bunch of the listeners will have all been 23. And once you hit 23 and you move on from college, you kind of look at college students a little differently than you did before.
And I think that occupation was an art student, so I don't.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
Who knows?
You might have just.
He should still be a senior, or anything, right? Point being is like timing wise, right? Like I think like as you become a senior and as you move towards the end of your college career, like you start really looking down on younger college students, and you're starting to look forward to being an adult. But many of us know at 23, you're still kind of a child. And not really an adult. Sorry, any 23-year-old.
No offense to any college students.
You met me when I was 23.
Yeah, we have all been there, and I would say we were not adults at 23 or 21. Like
you'll figure it out when you get older. It's okay. It'll all make sense. But I think this is what it comes in, and this is an instance of like the real world playing into Survivor, and this is why Survivor is such a good game, because the jury is always different, right? And I think what we're seeing from Alina here is Alina is respecting the game quite a bit for someone who's just kind of learning the game, but is also looking for maturity. And I think that's what why she votes towards Chase rather than Fabio. And I think another thing we really need to consider here, and McKenna, I don't know if you were intending to bring this up or not, Fabio wins by one vote, but receives both Nayanka and Purple Kelly's vote. And in future seasons, quitters
don't get
the jury.
Yeah. Right. Wow. Yeah.
So Chase wins this. And if you look at who is voting for Chase, it's Alina. It's
Jane, Holly.
Jane, Holly, and Brenda.
Brenda.
Right? Those are all the people who are leaning more strategic on this season.
That's true.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that is very pivotal in telling into what Alina Jane was leaning more strategic. I know it's a wild thing to say, but it's true. And because of that, I think it really does kind of indicate where Alina's influence on this jury comes, right? Like, I think Alina does impact this jury, but she's only impacting the people who are playing more of a strategic game and less of the social game.
So, if Chase had won by one vote, I think Alina's impact would be like far greater. Like we would look at this as being like one of the most impactful first jurors, but that one vote the other way, it's like, like you said, Celestine, it's like kind of an understated impact now.
Yeah.
So do we think Alina is a bitter or better juror or any of the other Bs we've used before?
There's been a lot of them.
Ultimately, I feel like she's better. I feel like she's not, you know, aggressive with her question, even though it has a little like cheek to it. It's not like super harsh or anything like that. Yeah. And she is trying to get to the bottom of strategy in the game. And that's, I guess, kind of all we want.
She gives Sash a fair chance at a question.
Like, supposedly.
Supposedly, yes. Or at least makes it look like
makes
it.
Makes it look like it.
Yeah.
And again, like the thing is, it's like it's unsubstantiated whether or not like the Sash not getting being allowed to be voted for actually happened or not. And it is kind of just like one of those rumors around in the Survivor fandom zeitgeist of it all. But because he ends up getting zero votes here, and it is a close vote between Fabio and Chase. But you're right, like Alina is still presenting in a way where there's a possibility Sash could get a vote here, as long as the rules of the games permitted it. And I think when you have a juror like that, it's always better, right? Like this is someone who is, other than Fabio, who ends up winning the season, who she's just like, you're a perpetual man-child. Was literal children. Just like throwing that out there again. It was only 21. But she's just in a place where it seems like she's willing to give everyone a chance. And whether she had her mind made up going into Final Tribal Council or not, she at least proposed an opportunity for everyone to really fight for themselves.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that was Alina. Now moving on to Redemption Island, and we have the full Murphy, David Murphy, as our first juror. But we have some weird goings-ons because it's Redemption Island. So obviously Matt Elrod is the merge boot, but he also was already voted out. Mike was voted out before David, but he got to stay in the game because he was winning on Redemption Island. But all of these people vote for Rob. It doesn't really matter in the end, unless you're Ralph voting for File. I mean, I feel like we have to just jump into the final tribal council speech for David. There's really not much to faff about within the episodes aside from he's a strategic threat. And so this is like one of the biggest vote for this person speeches we've gotten. We talked last episode about Eric Cardona going for Natalie, but he said it in a way where he's not like, vote for Natalie, dummies. Here, David is just like, this person did nothing. This person did nothing. The guy in the middle did everything. So obviously you need to vote for him. Rob is this biggest strategic mastermind that the game has ever seen, yada, yada, yada. And he's here in Final Tribal Council. Obviously you need to vote for him no matter how he voted you out.
Yeah. So, Lucina, give us your opinions
I am
David Murphy.
You know, I prefer Nicaragua over. what's interesting is that I keep wanting to call him Dan for some reason. Sorry, David is an attorney.
He looks like a Dan.
I know.
He does look like a Dan.
Yeah, and I think I wrote that down on my note on accident. Sorry. he's an attorney. And so it makes it like he embodied the same character the entire season. Like he was in his alliance and he was that kind of strategic person in his alliance, which is why they wanted to get him out. Right. They wanted to get him out first before the other people in that alliance, because he did pose the bigger threat out of the people in that alliance, the perceived threat, I should say. So it makes sense with his character that he would be that person to go and pitch that. Although what I do find interesting is that I feel like out of all seasons, this is the season where you shouldn't have to do a monologue about it, because it's so obvious that it's like maybe monologue for like maybe an underrated person. Or like when you were saying the whole Eric Cardona with Natalie, like that made sense because Natalie, I think, was very underrated. But like this, it really was like we all knew Rob was going to win. So it was like it's almost like for show, you know what I mean? So it's kind of interesting because they make it seem like, oh yeah, look at him. He's doing all this like work and he's trying hard. He's doing his like attorney pitch and he probably thinks he had all this power and like was able to sway people. But really we all knew when we saw how the first two episodes were shaking up. I was like, yeah, it's obvious, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he does go last. So I don't know whose opinion he could possibly sway after going through an entire 39 days and 8 final tribal speeches. This was going to be the thing. They're like, of course you're right. It wasn't Natalie Tenorelli the whole time. It was Rob. So this is absolutely just to have a big moment to hear yourself talk. Hey, I get it. You know, but
we're all here.
Like, but this is like this. He literally has a thing named after it, the full Murphy. Like everybody references this speech, and whenever there is a stump speech like this, this is the first one that people bring up. Not Eric Cardona, for instance, because this is the most like unnecessary, just completely direct speech. Like it's so funny. It's so funny, but it does set some sort of a tone for like the audience or for how great Boston Rob's game was. Like, did the producers tell him to say something like this? Like, make sure that everybody really knows how good Rob played on this game.
Well, did they though? Because like, there were what, three people who actually applied for Survivor on this season?
Four.
And David Four. Murphy was not so one close. Of them. David Murphy was a recruit. So I don't even know if David knew Survivor when he was doing this speech. And he was just like, oh my God, I am baffled by how fantastic this entire thing was. Right? And
yeah, probably.
Blinded by the control that Rob has. And I think to someone who is uneducated in Survivor, Rob does seem like he is playing a perfect game of Survivor. He plays a very dominating game of Survivor, but it's not perfect because it just happens to work based on the personalities he's with, right? Mm-hmm. We obviously see a bit of pushback from Christina in the pre-merge, and then the Zapateras once the merge does happen.
This episode was the buddy system too.
Right. Yeah. Mm. So we see this very domineering play by Rob that David wants to congratulate and commend in this final tribal council. But we as an audience don't need to know that. Maybe the people on the island did need to know that because they didn't understand the game well enough. Maybe they were a little bitter. Maybe David did help with that. But for me, I just can't take David Murphy seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you when David really set the tone was at the merge vote when Matt got voted out and he turns to his alliance and he says, genius is what that was. Yeah. And I think that there is where the tone was really set for anybody who didn't get it or didn't appreciate it. Like the most, your most strategic member of your alliance is telling you this guy is a genius. Like, I think that is where it stemmed from.
Yeah.
I think it's also fascinating too, because I feel like this is kind of like that era of like, we're bringing back all of the like really popular players to kind of come play. And at the very beginning of the season, we see that David really was not, during this season, we see that he was one of those people who was like, oh no, we gotta make sure that this was also the one where Russell was on it, right?
He was
one of the vocal people who was like, let's get Russell out. Let's get Russell out. Returnee people. Like, yeah, let's, he was all like gung ho about that and was kind of one of the most vocal people about that. So I think for him having Rob there at the end was also like, oh wow. See, like nobody got him out. That's like, that's so impressive. Like, because like you were saying, a recruit, he's very much looking at it from like that perspective of like, you know, strategic level and, oh, it's a returnee player who's here. And so I think that also was very fascinating too, because he was gung-ho about trying to get a lot of those people out. And really, he kind of reminds me of like those faithfuls and the traitors that are just like completely like, I'm the best faithful ever and I'm going to lead the charge to go and try and get out all of the traitors. Gave me those vibes. So it was interesting to see that kind of parallel at the end where it's like, oh, now I'm voting for the person that is a returnee.
Yeah. I mean, he says in his speech, when we started this game, two people came in. One of them claimed to be the best to ever play the game. He walked out on day 8. There's a guy sitting over there. He just played the best strategic game this game has ever seen, blah, 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 blah. But he's like, so this other guy claimed to be the best, but now look who is the best. And I don't think we can call David bitter, but I don't think he's better either. He's not basic or bland.
He's bombastic.
Wow. Okay, Kyle. We're getting up.
I'll tell you what, one of my favorite random things is when David is voting for Rob to go home. This is when he's voted out. He writes Rob times 10.
Or no, please count this as four Robs.
Yeah, four Robs. Yeah, yes. Four Robs to try as an attempt.
And Jeff is like, just no.
Just one. Like I said, my problem with David as a juror is I don't know how much the rest of the jury is taking him seriously here. Like everyone votes Rob. We could pretend that David had a big impact on this. It's not. because Rob had a very command of the game. But I think what David going out first actually does make this a better jury, because I think it does take any of the bitterness away from the Zapateros. I think, yes, Ralph votes for Philip, but I think that was actually like a genuine vote for Philip to make sure Philip came second place.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure like that's been said out there in the world, but that was just to make sure that Natalie didn't get the second place money and Philip did instead.
That's crazy.
But everything else here, like if you look at some of these Zapateros who were voted out post merge, right? Your
Mike,
your Mikes, your Julies, right? Like these are people who were quite bitter in game, but still give Rob his kudos at the end of the game. And I think David being there as the first juror, as someone who maybe didn't know the game that well, but understood the game enough to be to like respect the game that Rob was playing. And I think it's very different. Like we've already talked about Rob sitting in a final tribal council and how much the jury like, kind of impacts that, right? With Lex being there, having everyone come back who's feeling bitter in the game and maintaining that bitterness. David being there can't, it doesn't matter how unserious you take this man. Him being there and being like, no, 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 like this is why what Rob did was smart is probably enough to have swayed a couple of votes Rob's way that might not have gone there just out of spite.
Yeah, he probably did this
era too.
Yeah, he may have been talking about this like throughout Ponderosa, kind of like priming them. And I think it also needs to be said that like Rob probably doesn't win against a lot of other people on this season. Like, I think that's been said that like he loses to Grant. He loses to Ashley probably. Like, I don't know about Andrea, but you know, he had to get with these two specific people. So if he was against either one of those two, does David's speech land as well?
Yeah.
Or do other people have their minds made up because they are really bitter at Rob? And they'll vote for Grant, but they really hate Philip and they really hate Natalie. So I wonder if there was somebody with a little bit more respect from the jury, if this would have been effective.
He might have switched up his speech a little bit to make it be more effective. It was just easy in this time to be like, I can say what I want to say because it doesn't matter. Nobody's voting for Philip. Nobody's voting for Natalie.
This is something we talked about last week with Eric Cardona's speech, right? Where it's like, Eric's speech for Natalie makes a lot more sense because it doesn't, she doesn't seem like an automatic like forerunner for the game. The weird thing about David's speech here, it just doesn't seem necessary.
Yeah,
it's not. It is interesting though too, because I was alluding to it, is that this like fits the narrative of the era. Like I feel like this was the era when you're like playing that basic cookie cutter strategy game, you're gonna win the season, or that's what people look for when you're winning typically. And so people look for that in a game, but like now Survivor's evolved so much that it's really complex. Like your win can be super nuanced. You could have like an emotional game, you could have a social game, and I feel like during this time it was just sort of the unwritten rule that this type of person is the type of person that you want to win. So it would be really fascinating to see, if he was on a season now, how would he vote and how would he look at the game? Would he still have that same sort of perspective of, oh my gosh, I think that this type of Rob game is always, I'm always going to vote for it? Or is he going to also evolve too? So I look at things based on the eras and how they're perceived in the era, just like in like, you know, the first few seasons versus like middle school versus new school era.
One thing I love about summer is how easy everything feels. The days are a little more relaxed and I find myself reaching for the same comfortable go-anywhere pieces again and again. That's why I keep coming back to Quince. They focus on well-made essentials that naturally become those everyday staples you actually live in all season long.
Quince's 100% European linen pants and shirts are breathable, easy to throw on, and a summer upgrade your rotation needs, starting at just $34. And Phil, I told you this before, but I don't often wear linen shirts or linen pants. But now that I have them from Quince, I find myself going back to them time and time again, whether it's an upscale outdoor event or if I'm just hanging by the beach or at the pool, I'm reaching for these shirts all throughout the summer. Also, their tees are soft enough to live in all day, and the lightweight cotton sweaters are exactly what you want when summer nights cool down. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middlemen. So you're paying for exceptional quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a trusted favorite for everything from home to travel to everyday essentials.
Make your summer wardrobe easier. Go to quince.com/specialist for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/specialist with an S at the end for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/specialists. Your paycheck date could soon become the most irrelevant number in your life. Earnin is a non-bank finance app, 5 million people and growing. The concept is almost annoyingly simple. You earn money, you access it. Up to $150 per day of what you've already worked for, up to $1,000 between paychecks. Tips are optional and standard transfers take 1 to 2 business days with no mandatory fees. Expedited transfers start at $399 and cap at $599. It's not about emergencies. It's just a better way to exist financially day to day. Worth checking out. Look, you all know I wear a lot of hats, and nothing annoys me more than waiting for money that I earned while due dates inch closer and closer. I did the work, so what's taking so long? We live in an era of instant gratification, so why don't we demand instant access to our money? The most essential thing we need to participate in society is the thing we wait for the most. That's absurd. End the absurdity today. Download Earnin on the App Store or Google Play, spelled like earning money without the G. Type in the specialist under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Access limits are based on your earnings and risk factors. Standard cash outs take 1 to 2 business days with no mandatory fees. Expedited transfers available for a fee. Tips are voluntary and don't affect the service. Available in select states. Terms and restrictions apply. Visit earnin.com for full details.
All right. Moving on to South Pacific, and this one is, I feel like, even tougher than Redemption Island. Jim Rice is technically our first juror, but him and Keith get eliminated at the same time. So it's both Jim and Keith essentially share the mayor of Ponderosa role. But then Ozzy gets voted out before Jim, but after Keith. And he is basically talking to all of the jurors before they become jurors. So he is like talking their ear off. So we almost have three quote unquote first jurors here because the three boys are on Redemption together.
And the last juror.
Yeah, exactly. That too. So Ozzy is able to like talk to every juror pretty much as they are leaving the game. Ultimately all three vote for Sophie. So if we lose, you know, one of them, cause Ozzy was actually voted out of the game, it doesn't, I think, impact too much. What's the vote count at South Pacific's?
It's 6-3.
Mm-hmm. 6-3. So, I mean, yeah, so Jim and Keith are hard because they're both voted out at the same time here, but Jim is a little bit more vocal than Keith, has a lot more of a presence on the season than Keith, and will be able to sway people more than Keith would be able to. So it's almost like they have good cop, bad cop, and insane cop with Ozzy as they enter Ponderosa.
Mm-hmm. Jim Rice is my man. Like he's one of my like favorite.
I was the biggest Jim kind Rice of fan.
I am the biggest Jim Rice fan out there. With that being said, I don't know like what his effect was on this jury. Like I don't really know for sure exactly what he was basing his vote off of, because like he and Sophie, they don't really spend too much time together. He didn't spend much time with many of the Apolus. But it's really the anti-Cochran tone that is set with this jury. From the moment that Cochran flips and Keith goes home, it's all about we don't want Cochran to win. We hate Cochran. We're going to try and get everybody to flip on Cochran. Like that's kind of their strategy from the Savaiis. Like that's how we're going to survive one more vote, is throwing Cochran under the bus. So that I think is more of the tone that is set. Like don't flip. It makes this huge moment out of what Cochran does. But as far as like the Apolus, I don't really know what this is. Like, what tone is he setting here?
Yeah. He does. What's good about him in the game is he pegs Sophie and Albert as not being in the cult of Coach, and they're kind of sound mind, and he's able to try and pitch to them. Now, I think he then at Final Tribal Council identifies those two, because he's written off Coach, identifies those two as the ones that he wants to vote for. My guess, mainly leaning Sophie, that's why he asks his question to Albert of why should the people next to you not win, and don't say a compliment.
Your favorite.
And Albert destroyed that and complimented Jim. He didn't compliment Coach in the way of like, he played a great game, but which was Jim's example. He then complimented Jim, and it was like, well, you didn't tell me I couldn't compliment you, basically, but still, you know, did not abide by Jim's question. And so Jim was then firmly in Sophie's corner. And I feel like that's how he kind of navigated the jury, identified, you know, those two people as the ones that are able to puppet and maneuver throughout the game because they are of sound mind. And then once they got to the Final Tribal Council, decided, you know, between the two of them.
I think this decision was made by Final Tribal Council. And I think actually Jim's very important in here. But I think you made a very good point, McKenna, where the real first juror this season is Ozzy. Mm. Ozzy being on on Redemption Island and talking to everyone before he eliminates them from the game is a big influence on a lot of these Savaiis. In my opinion, I think what we see here is a push to really like make sure this idea that like Coach cannot win. Like, yes, arguably Coach controlled this entire game, right? He is controlling the game. He's created this cult in the family and kept it all together, and is working towards pushing it to the win and getting to the end. But Jim being someone who is approaching the game very strategically, understanding the nuances of the game, and disrespecting that Coach game is really important in pushing over the Sophie over Albert. I think Albert condemns himself with making Brandon give up immunity and voting him out. Mm-hmm. I think that's really like what makes it so the Savaiis know who they're voting for between Albert and Sophie ultimately. But if you look at like the vote distribution for this, right? The people, the only Upolo who votes for Sophie to win is Brandon. And he's not gonna vote for Coach, and he's not gonna vote for Albert because he's bitter, right?
Yeah.
So really this was just a very calculated strong front from Savaii as to who they were going to put the votes on to win, with obviously minus Cochran, who
aside from
votes Cochran. For Coach. But
yeah.
I think what we really do see from Jim here. Jim isn't as bitter at the Cochran flip as an Ozzy is, as a Whitney is, mm-hmm. as a Dawn is, right? He's definitely still bitter, but he isn't quite as bitter there because I think he is a little more sound of mind, and he does have a greater appreciation for the game and can see what's going on there. Ultimately, because this is a very like us versus them season, I think what we see from Jim here is just the push for this is the person who like played the game well, did what she needed to do to get to the end, said the right things, and really he does influence it to push, I think, towards Sophie because Sophie is visibly doing more than Albert is and presenting it in a better way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that this is another version of what we talked about in Australian Outback when Alicia said there's going to be more of us on the jury than your alliance. And it's the same case here where it's like the Savaiis have control over the jury. And who you have Albert, who's, you know, kind of smarmy and is making false promises. You have Coach, he's making false promises. Right, telling Ozzy I'll send you to fire, and then doesn't like, mm-hmm. and then Sophie is not doing that.
Yeah,
right? Yeah. Like, she is the one who is not actively making them feel better as they're going out the door, but Albert and Coach are making them feel worse. So, you know, sure, they are. And so, you know, that's, it's like, there's more of them on the jury. So, like,
yeah,
you know, Coach gets the Upolus, but the majority of the jury is not Upolu.
What I find interesting about Jem and just like his overall game and his impact in the season, and you'll have to remind me because I'm not a numbers person, and going yes, exactly. Thank you, McKenna. Going into the merge, how many were of the Savai'i were there and how many of the Upolu were there? It was even
going
into okay. The merge. So what I find very, very fascinating, and I think could have been a completely different trajectory in the game, is social games matter and how you treat people matter. And whether or not people want to say how Cochrane felt, and you know, perception is reality. And I almost wonder if like they had brought in initially Cochrane and like made him feel really good. And they, you know, like if he didn't flip, they had the option and they could have propelled themselves and it would have been a completely different scenario. But because Cochrane ended up flipping, that really steered the trajectory of the game. And you know, Jem was a big factor in that because there was so many times, like you were saying, it was like, get Cochrane out. And then that became their new thing, because after they saw that they were slowly getting decimated, they were like, you know, it's going to be us. It's going to be us. And then they started pitching that. But it would be really fascinating to see what would happen if they actually had Cochrane as like a tight person in their alliance. And then even if he was on the bottom, if they still have this sort of like loyalty and they kind of made it to the kind of like it was a swapped thing. They made it to the end. And then eventually, you know, they're like, okay, well, we have to eventually start eliminating people. So then they eliminated Cochrane, but it wouldn't have had been that sour taste in their mouth. So I find that very fascinating. And because of that, I do think he did have an impact, whether it's, you know, a good or a bad impact based on, you know, perspective. That's, you know, that's, I do think that there was an impact, because the whole entire season could have been different had they decided maybe the way we treat this member of our alliance. So I always like to think about that too, because social does matter, and how you treat people does matter.
That's a really good point. So I was seeing
that
I think like we haven't really discussed how that's impacted the jury at all. It's like the game moves, which have resulted in the people on the jury being in the jury.
And
I think that is really important in this season, because it is the treatment of Cochrane that really dictates how this jury becomes so Savai'i heavy.
Well, I'll tell you how Jim Rice could have won this game was if Ozzy had played his idol on Cochrane at the merge vote instead of I think he plays it on Whitney, right? Because if you play it on Cochrane was really worried about going to rocks and getting rocked out. But if you play your idol on him, now he doesn't feel like he has to flip. It's like, oh, my alliance is feeling really good about me, right? I'm a valued member here. So I don't know. I don't understand why Ozzy didn't do that. That's one thing I've always questioned.
Jim, in one of these tribal councils, kept saying like about Cochrane, we keep fighting all of your battles, and that would be yet another battle that Jim, Ozzy, Keith, Whitney, Dawn are fighting for Cochrane. You know, that's when Jim throws in, you know, the noble and the warrior that makes Coach like perk up a little bit. And he really gives a good speech here to try and sway the Upolus. He doesn't do his move of putting the necklace around Ozzy's neck here, like he said he might, which weird that we have two of the exact same situation happen with like Kathy and Lex and now Ozzy and Jim. But I can't tell if he's bitter or if he's better. He is one of those like kind of middle ground where it feels like he wasn't the reason the votes went the way that they did. It was Ozzy, but he also, you know, assisted Ozzy once they got to Ponderosa, I guess.
Yeah, it's hard to judge, and it's hard to judge on these Redemption Island seasons as well. I don't know where Celestina just went, but
she'll be back.
On these Redemption Island seasons, because there is so much time spent on Redemption Island, and we see these jurors really like spending time together more, and it's impossible to kind of gauge how much, you know, Sophie not being a complete asshole plays into this vote here. Sophie beating Ozzy in the final immunity, how much does that play into the vote here? But I think it's very easy to say this is a very bitter jury. This is one of the more bitter juries. Mm-hmm. Even, but it's harder to determine bitter juries when there are as a final three instead of a final two. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very telling that the most bitter juries in Survivor happen to be in final twos and not final threes, because that third person there can kind of just be ignored. But there is still a third person there. And I think what we see here is the Savaiis are quite bitter towards Coach for what Coach did in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, like, I do have to put Jim in the bitter category rather than the better category.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely fair. Because, like, this is an instance where I do think I love Sophie, but I think that this is an instance where, like, Coach lost the game for himself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, Coach is responsible for making those jurors bitter against him. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I would agree that this is a bitter jury, and that Jim is a bitter juror.
All right, now we head on over to One World. I'm just going to get it out of the way. Jonas is better for every reason.
Jonas is the best.
Jonas is the best, yes. He is just so sweet and nice, and just questioning why he's the one going out here. I think Kim is correct in getting Jonas out here because he is like that leader of the other side. But he is also the chef, the provider. You know, why are we taking out this guy who is so influential in our camp survival wise now? We can get him later. He didn't do great in challenges, so that he does have a few people batting for him, but not batting hard enough to keep him around through this round.
This is one of those instances, and let's go to Sam Phelan here for this. Jonas is the glue guy, right? And I think that that's why it's so important that Jonas is the first person out here for Kim's win. Because I think Jonas being there can be a uniting force for these men in a way, because he is kind of like a little more happy-go-lucky, still understands the game well enough, but it's a very likable person and makes it easier to unite these men who were in shambles. Like, they were in shambles. They gave up in group immunity. Who does that?
Right? I mean, like, Jonas was also picking fights with Tarzan this episode too.
Yeah,
he was. But granted, Tarzan also cleans his dirty underwear in a pot in this episode.
Yeah, so, it's just dirt. It's not poop.
There's no way it's not poop. There is zero chance it's not poop.
It's just dirt. The way he said.
Also, it doesn't matter. It's still touching his ass. Like, I don't know if you know this, but toilets are disgusting because, like, poop flies everywhere and you just don't see it.
Why is this the conversation? Moving back to Jonas.
I'm justifying Jonas.
We're pivoting. He went to poop. We're going to Celestina. Thoughts on Jonas?
Like you were saying, he's just a nice guy. You know, you like nice guys, and I think that ultimately also is why he's voted out. Like, you sometimes being a nice person can be threatening. You have like relationships, you have you know, you could put, there's that also the potential of having a pull, like you could have a pull on you know, certain people, and then that could end up, you know, meaning that somebody goes home, you know. So I understand having why they had him go out first. Kind of similarly, he also was, after Colton had left, he kind of became the de facto leader in that misfit alliance that they were having too, because he seemed like the only one that was like sort of had like a somewhat understanding of the game, and that like why we're playing the game and what's happening with the game, and like, you know, kind of the purpose, because everybody else kind of seemed like they were on their own little planet and they were all playing, I don't know what they were playing. I don't know if they were playing Survivor, but they were playing something. And I think Jonas kind of seemed like the one person that maybe could have had like a bigger pull.
And he also came about it like he does take the game seriously, but in his final words, he says things like, so I came here to go big or go home, and I went big and I'm now going home. His final tribal council question has the, you must address me as Master Jonas. And then he goes into a bit more, of Sabrina is, if this was the most popular, you'd get my vote. You still might. But it's crazy how bad you sucked at challenges. Chelsea, you're cute. All us guys agree you're the hottest chick of the season. Now name your boldest, biggest move you made without Kim. Mm-hmm. And then Kim, basically, you kicked my ass, but that doesn't necessarily deserve my vote. Why didn't you take Christina? That was like basically the easy beat, pans over to Christina. But he has some good thoughts within these jokey kind of sayings and stuff. And I can appreciate that he's still taking the game seriously, but with a levity that just makes it a season like One World that's kind of part of the Dark Ages just a little bit brighter.
Yeah. That's why I love Jonas so much. But I don't have too much to say about Jonas in terms of a juror. Yeah. He's just not around long enough to, you know, like when I think of this jury, I think of Troy Zan and his, you know, speech. Like, he votes for Sabrina.
But that's a bitter vote, and we all know it.
Oh, absolutely. It's a bitter vote. So that's what I think. So Jonas is definitely better because I guess he kind of saves the jury, helps steer it in the direction towards Kim, and does not let Troy Zan dominate. Like, if he is the glue guy, if he is the leader of the men, it's clear with this that because Troy Zan saw himself as the leader, he assumed that role or tried to many times throughout the season, but his opinion did not overtake this jury. It was majority still going for Kim, and Jonas helped foster that environment and opinion as being the first juror.
Let them, you know, have their own opinions, like just like let them be, or, you know, helped boost Kim a little bit after, you know, they were came back and talked, oh, you know, Kim did me dirty, blah blah blah, but for her game this was a good move, X, Y, and Z. But also I don't think he was, you know, these other people suck, so Kim has to win, like a David Murphy situation here.
Yeah.
He did foster other people's opinions. It feels like from his nature, it feels like he was just open to hearing people out and not forcing his own opinion on the jury.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very similar to what I was saying with Lex and All Stars in the opposite way, right? Where sometimes it doesn't matter who the person is that goes on to the jury for, like, actually determining the winner, but it is for setting the tone. And I think that's what we see here. I think Jonas is just such a, because Jonas has this, like, levity to him, and because he does kind of have a very calming presence, and he can make it so that people, you know, can think things through a little more logically and let go of their intense emotions and frustrations with things, that's what I think he really contributes as a juror. I think he is just the type of person who goes in and is able to calm people down and, like, talk things through. He's a very reasonable person who, yes, provides an opportunity for everyone to make their case as to why they should win. Mm-hmm. But in the end, he is just making sure the jury that is quite similar to what we saw in South Pacific, right? Like, there's a lot of men on this jury. In fact, there's more of them than there are women. So, like, that entire tribe could have decided who won this game. Mm-hmm. But one of them does vote differently than the rest of them. But he presents an opportunity for all of these men to make their own decision and make it without bitterness, and instead just fostering kind of like this idea of, like, hey, let's just look at this game. And I think that's really what Jonas brings to make him a better juror.
Mm-hmm. Jonas, better juror. All right. better. We're going to RC, which is interesting because she is the only one who votes for Lisa here.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it was interesting because you hate her.
Okay, hate is a strong word. We reserve that for Shannon. RC is not my favorite character on Philippines. I will just, you know, put it that way. But yeah, she's the only one who votes for Lisa here. And being that first juror and then being the only one to vote a certain way really leads you to question, what impact did she have? Mm-hmm. Well, seems like not much. and she really, her questioning in Final Tribal Council is of, you know, simping for Lisa, of like, this person should win the game, but it has absolutely no impact on anybody in this jury. And she even had, you know, some people who liked her and everything like that. I know there was struggles with Abby, Pete, but she did have, you know, some connections throughout the game. So I just wonder why her impact was just not there. Obviously, Denise had the story of every tribal council. Mm-hmm. That is hard to overcome. But I don't know. Lisa deserves more love.
She might have been right, RC, to be honest. She might have been right that Lisa deserved to win this season.
Yeah.
I mean, we all deserve love, but, you know, we deserve to be voted for at the end for $1 million.
I don't know, man. I think, Celestina, you deserved more love when you got into our Final Tribal Council. So,
Okay. I think what's interesting about RC here, and it's something that's different than the previous four we've had, because despite the fact that there were no swaps in Redemption Island and in South Pacific, mm-hmm. there is an instance of like spending more time with the other tribe because of the Redemption Island mechanic, right? You're spending more time and getting to know the other tribe. Sure, you're not necessarily getting to know the people presenting themselves, their case at the Final Tribal Council, but you can at least kind of get insight into what the other tribe thought of them as well. This is the only season in the stretch that doesn't have a swap. It has an absorption instead, mm-hmm. right? When Matt Singh drops and Denise is on Calabao and not on Tandang. So RC literally only spends this one round with Denise. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't really get an opportunity to see that. What she does get to see from Denise is kind of Denise like picking on Abby Maria the entire time at Tribal Council, mm-hmm. right? And that's what she's doing. But she spent the entire pre-merge with Lisa. She spent all this time cultivating a relationship with Lisa.
Scoobin was her number one.
Yeah, but she was still... Yeah, but I mean, that's Michael Scoobin still.
And she I think was good at that time.
She was ahead of her time.
Yeah. But I think what it really comes down to is she's cultivated this relationship. I don't think it's surprise. This isn't really like, why does RC vote for Lisa? This is more of a, this is why RC doesn't vote for Denise. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the interesting thing. I don't think she has any impact on this jury whatsoever, clearly, yeah. because she is the only person who votes the way she does. However, I do think she gets up there and speaks for Lisa and presents a case that is compelling as to why Lisa should maybe win this season. It's mm-hmm. like you said, McKenna, though, it's really hard to beat Denise's narrative.
Yeah. I mean, RC pegged her as, you know, she's going to be a smart cookie in this game. We need to get her out soon. And she kept saying that. Nobody would listen. And there she is in the final three. But that's also just her opinion, mm-hmm. where it's not like there's no fact to be able to sway someone. It's like, mm-hmm. I knew she would do it. All right, that's great that you did. You know, it doesn't really have any legs as something to grip on for any of the other jurors. Yes, you know, it's great that you thought that, but it doesn't provide anything for the other jurors to latch on to and then run with that narrative.
Yeah. I think it's interesting too, because the one thing I will say about RC is that she's an opinionated queen. And I love that because I think, and one thing I resonate with her on is that I would go into a final three situation. And even if somebody played an amazing game, if I like somebody, I'm going to vote for them. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just who I am. And I think that she liked Lisa. Like you were saying, she spent the most time. Like, I can kind of, in a way, understand. Like, if you don't know somebody, it's really hard to make a decision about somebody's game if you don't know them. Yes, you can go and you can see all of the tribal councils, but that's just a very small portion of what's happening. They're really recapping everything that's happening at camp. So I'm like, if your heart's telling you, you know what, I'm going to vote for this person because I know them and they're my friend and they're nice, why not? I mean, I would vote for somebody, and I'm also petty. Like, I would be like, you know what? I don't like this person. I'm not going to vote for them. I'm going to vote for the other person, even if this other person did play a better game. Like, it's just, likability is so important. And I feel like, you know, people don't really think about that often, but I do when I'm watching Survivor. I'm like, you know what? She liked that person. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not mad at it.
I think RC's like pitch or tone doesn't work for a few reasons. For one, this is a situation for anybody who's into sports where like the box score is just hard to deny, where Denise out, she goes to every single tribal council. She's on the disaster tribe. She makes it to the end. That is almost an impossible case to beat. You also had the scooping factor, where scooping was like kind of ruining things for Lisa, I think, because they were seen as like a duo, and scooping was, you know, delusional. People didn't respect him. And I think Lisa took a lot of that unfairly. And then as well, RC is the one who's pitching for Lisa, but she was kind of on the bottom of her tribe. Right. Like her tribe is largely responsible for why she is the first person voted out. It's why, you know, it's called the unintentional Tandang, or Tandang is referenced as like, this is why you maybe want to go to tribal council before the merge, because there's so much infighting and RC was on the bottom of that. So she's not someone whose pitch you're going to listen to. When it came to someone like David, you know, he was in the minority and all his alliance was on the jury. But with RC, and he was well respected within that, but RC was not. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that her pitch is not going to land as well.
And
I think Kyle brings up a really good point here, because the people that she was aligned with at the end of that are the two people sitting at Final Tribal Council from her original tribe, rather than the people who were on the jury with her. She's on the jury with the people who didn't like her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she's also batting for Lisa, who is an emotional player too, and we have seen time and time again that nobody gives credit to the emotional players. Just because you cry or, you know, break down or whatever does not mean you're any less of a player. And
I can relate to that.
And people don't see that.
And the older woman factor too. Let's not forget that's hard for, you know, for an older woman to get that respect.
Yeah. So I think RC was trying to do the Lord's work and it did not work. But RC, bitter or better? Or another B.
I won't come up with any more.
Because I don't think she had any impact, but I don't think she was super bitter. She just didn't really know.
She was just there. For someone who was such a large part of the first half of the season, she really has no impact.
Blind.
Basic.
Blind.
Alrighty, everyone. Well, that is our show today. Thank you, Celestina, for hopping on and making these dark ages just a little bit brighter. John, what do we got going on in the Specialist Universe?
Well, Phil and Once Upon an Island will be back tomorrow to discuss the same five seasons and their winners and the winning games of those seasons tomorrow. Yesterday, Phil, Will, and Blake started our countdown of our winner rankings, going through winners 50 through 41. That was very interesting. You can see McKenna and I are part of that with our combined winner ranking list to just like change those numbers a little bit so that, you know,
Chris Underwood
gets a little bit of respect. It didn't work. It doesn't help when all of them put him at 50.
It's crazy. But, and you didn't even let us defend ourselves on the podcast.
No, I knew Phil was doing that as soon as he said that we weren't allowed on that podcast.
I gotta tune into that. I missed that one.
So that's happening. Tegma's still doing her China rewatch every once in a while. So tune in and, you know, click the bell, get notifications so you know when that happens. Like the video, subscribe to the channel. We really appreciate you guys listening to all this. Patreon's still bumping. There's a lot going on there still. So make sure you tune in and you can hear, I don't know, Phil and I talk about Bend It Like Beckham this week because, you know, the World Cup's going on. So we got to talk about soccer.
Soccer movies. Alrighty, everyone. Thank you for tuning in and giving the love to this series. We really appreciate it and have a blast making it. So all of your support really means a lot. And we will see you next week with some better seasons. So thanks for making it through the episode. Goodbye.